Big show for you here today. It is the latest edition of our teams that will shape the draft series. This time, looking at some of the top contending teams with our guy Scott Pienowski. Yes, he's taking a break from fantasy baseball to come chop up some football takes with me. Chargers, they're changing ecosystem. Eagles, they're changing ecosystem. Can the 49ers stay healthy? What are the Rams and Seahawks looking to do in the NFL draft? All that and more come up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that. Yes, we've rescued him from the caverns, the caves of fantasy baseball. It is our guy, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, great to be here, man. Although I'm having a ball over at Yahoo Fantasy with baseball, and you can still sign up for a Yahoo Fantasy Baseball League if you've missed out. Want to do another team. Also doing some March Madness content. Happy to see the Michigan Wolverines advancing to the Final Four. Masters is not far away. So it's a very concentrated part of the sport calendar. But of course, the NFL is a 12-month league. We're not far away from the draft. And we're not far away from fantasy football really getting going for 2026. So I can't wait to chop it up with you over the next hour.
Yeah, I'm over here saying it's a hell of a day to talk ball. And Scott's like, it's a hell of a day to talk golf balls, basketballs, baseballs, you know, the sports that are actually going to be playing live games. And I'm like, no, Scotty, you got to hop on the show here and talk about some teams that are going to shape the NFL draft. That's what we're doing here. We're continuing the series that we do every Tuesday leading up to the NFL draft, where we look in on a section of specific teams that will shape this year's NFL draft. And Scott, we had to pull you for this show because it's the contenders, baby. That's what we're doing. We're doing a deep dive on the contenders that are hoping to be just one good draft away from potentially winning it all. These are the teams that we are going to discuss today. We had to have a specific methodology for what is a contender. So essentially, we just looked at the teams that have a better than plus 2,000 odds to win the Super Bowl next year, according to BetMGM. Those teams are the Los Angeles Rams, the Seattle Seahawks, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens, the San Francisco 49ers, the Philadelphia Eagles, the LA Chargers, the Green Bay Packers, and the Detroit Lions. We're not going to talk about these five teams here on the list. The Denver Broncos also are among this list as well. We're not going to be discussing the Broncos, the Ravens, Chiefs, the Packers, or the Patriots, only because, Scott, they are going to come up on they've either come up on previous episodes in the series, or they will be coming up on a future episode. So we're talking Rams, Seahawks, Bills, Niners, Chargers, Eagles, Lions, and then we're going to wrap it up with a brief discussion on the Panthers and the Texans, as they're two interesting teams with kind of young quarterbacks who are still trying to kind of prove and find themselves. So it's a fascinating group of essentially seven teams we're going to deep dive on here today.
Right, and you were smart to keep the Patriots off my menu because I'd probably talk about them for 52 minutes and nobody wants to hear that. But yeah, these are fun teams, right? These are teams that are thinking playoffs. These are teams that are thinking Super Bowl. And obviously the correlation is the better teams in football are going to be the better teams in fantasy football. Most of these teams have check marks at quarterback, a check marks at head coach, a check marks at play caller. And we're trying to figure out, okay, which way are they going? Is the arrow pointed upward? A lot of these teams have players who are maybe on the back nines of their career, which we're going to talk about today. So this is, you know, as you're listening, dear fantasy player, you know, how do I apply this? These are going to be sweet spots to draft into. These are going to be infrastructures, organizations, backdrops that you want to have strong pieces of in your portfolio when we really get into the teeth of draft season in a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, the Seattle Seahawks, the team that won the Super Bowl, is a great proof of concept of that, Scott, that one of the best picks you could make this year was Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the reigning offensive player of the year, the $40-plus million man. And a big part of that was because they became this great offensive ecosystem, not totally, but in large part because they just became this great team. And one of the reasons that they became a great team was because they had two great picks in the NFL draft with their first and second round pick. Gray Zabel, offensive guard, was a huge piece in stabilizing an offensive line that was an issue for this team over the previous two seasons. Nicky Manwari, obviously this doesn't necessarily move the needle from a fantasy football perspective on the offensive side of the football, but he was clearly like, hey, they know what they're doing from a defensive standpoint, when they took him in the second round, he fit that defense to a T, the 25th pick in the second round. And they got some guys that contributed in kind of moments, I would say, with tight end Elijah Arroyo and fifth round pick Torrey Horton, who was looking like he was coming on before his season ended with an injury. So the Seahawks, Scott, are a great proof of concept of exactly what you're talking about, that if we can identify these teams that are going to take a leap in the real life NFL because of the draft, we can find some fantasy football values. And with that, let's actually get this conversation started with the Seattle Seahawks. This is a recap of what they've done this offseason. They added running back Emmanuel Wilson on a one-year deal. They re-signed Jake Bobo on a two-year contract after the Jaguars tried to pull him away in restricted free agency. Rashid Shaheed was brought back on a three-year deal. They re-signed Jaxon Smith-Njigba to a mega deal extension there. They re-signed Josh Jones, offensive tackle, brought in corner Noah Igbinoghene. Josh Jobe they brought back on a three-year deal. They brought in two safeties, DeAnthony Bell and Rodney Thomas. Their top team needs, according to Mock Draft Database, cornerback, running back, edge rusher, and interior offensive line. So, Scott, for our purposes, I guess I'm curious, just what do you think about this Seahawks offense right now, being able to run back some of the same things that we saw last year? Obviously, an efficient passing attack, a run game that found itself mostly in the postseason. How are you feeling about the Seahawks team running it back in general, and especially on the offensive side of the football?
Yeah, I think they're going to be good again. Just the overall infrastructure of this team, the brain trust, right? You talked about how great they were last year in the draft. The draft before, they get Devin Witherspoon, they get JSN, they get Jack Charbonnet stocking the fridge after they traded Russell Wilson to the Broncos. Just one of the all-time great heist jobs in NFL history. It's right up there with the Herschel Walker trade and the Jim Plunkett trade and some of the more famous trades in NFL history, where teams just got to get everything they needed, do all their grocery shopping on somebody else's dime. So well done by Seattle. Now, look, it was two running backs last year. Obviously, Kenneth Walker is gone. They're going to need a running mate for Charbonnet. They hope it's going to be Emmanuel Wilson. So I'm curious to see what Emmanuel Wilson can do. Is he one of those what the heck flexes that Sigmund Bloom might say? Is he somebody we're going to be playing because he can get 9 to 13 projectable touches a week? What's left with Cooper Kupp, age 33 season? Can they get Shaheed going when they acquire him? OC knows him, hoping he can have a role. He was really just a bit player. He wasn't really involved in the Super Bowl run. I'm curious to see what Shaheed does. I wasn't sure if he's going to come back or not, but I've always liked him. I'd like to see him take a step forward this year.
Yeah, I think let's start in the running back position, because we just had Josh Norris on for Mock Draft Monday earlier this week, and he sent Mike Washington, he of the fast 40 time, big weight, the size, speed, freak athleticism that Mike Washington had, he sent him to the Seattle Seahawks. And I think, Scott, if we do get a running back draft pick to this team, it's one of the few spots that you look around the NFL right now and you just think, like, they don't have a week one starter at the position, because I think you and I both have some affection for Zach Charbonnet's game. He had a serious knee injury in the postseason. Like, when will he be fully ready to rock? When will he even be ready to play? It's very unlikely that he'll be ready to play at the start of next season. I think Emmanuel Wilson's a nice depth player, but he's not the guy that I would want to be running out as a starter in week one. So I think what they do with the NFL draft will tell us a lot. But they're not a team, Scott, that has a bunch of picks either. They're not one of these teams that's flush with resources. I think they only have a small handful of picks. So are they just without question earmarking one of those for a running back? If they do, I would say that they're one of those teams. They have four picks in the NFL draft right now. They have their first rounder, their second rounder, their third rounder, and then a sixth rounder. That's it. So, like, if they don't take a running back, I don't think they'll take one at 32 overall. But if they don't take one in the second or third round, we're going to be looking at kind of like a quagmire backfield here.
I wouldn't be surprised if they traded into the draft where they give up,
sure,
like a, you know, third or fourth round pick next year down the road to get an extra pick. And the great thing about needing running back depth, we've seen the way the draft has changed in maybe the last 10, 15 years, where you can get an interesting running back in round three, round four, round five, even as an undrafted free. They're going to probably sign a couple of guys as soon as the draft is over. So it used to be that if you didn't have the draft capital, you just weren't getting a running back of influence. Those days are long gone, and they've proven, and look at the guys that they've added, they've been able to piece together who weren't first round picks at that position. So I always say I want to bet on what the smart people are betting. I want to backline those guys. And I think Seattle has proven to be one of those maybe five or six organizations that seems a little bit smarter than everybody else. So I think they'll have a plan. I do think they're going to find a way to have maybe an extra pick or two. And I think there's definitely going to be a running back added. And it may be a case of sometimes you don't play these guys in September, or you draft them as speculative pieces, but you're not sure when they're going to be useful. Maybe a case of somebody drafts these guys, they drop them, you pick them up later in the season. It could be a slow developing Polaroid in that backfield, but I do think they'll figure something out and give us what's going to be. It's going to be a last year. They're not going to be slam dunks. And we were talked almost every week, it felt like, about Walker versus Charbonnet and who could you trust and who was playing better and who was going to get goal line carries and, you know, who pass blocks better, who fits certain packages, who fits certain game plans. So that was always a weekly discussion. And then it got changed in the postseason when Charbonnet got hurt. And then Walker, of course, goes crazy, wins Super Bowl MVP. He's now the employee of the Kansas City Chiefs. But I think they'll figure something. I think the bottom line is this. When the season's over, I think we're going to look up and say, oh yeah, like, you know, the Seahawks gave us like a solid running back 2/3 and maybe a solid running back flex in the fantasy playoffs or down the stretch in the fantasy season. It just may not develop in September.
So just to put a bow on the Seahawks conversation, to kind of go back to just the overall ecosystem here, and I think that will guide us once we do get whoever this running back is, you know, when we start to debate these secondary pass catchers beyond JSN. Even AJ Barner, I think, is a name to consider here. Maybe Elijah Arroyo takes a step in year two, but these tight ends are certainly interesting to me. Last year, in just the average metrics that I like to look at to measure offensive efficiency, they were about the 12th best offense in the NFL last year. And for the most part, we got one consistent high end, but still just one consistent fantasy football starter out of that offense. Do you think they finish higher or lower, or better or worse than the 12th best offense in 2026? Again, very, very early prediction.
I mean, the cop-out answer would be that's probably where I would have them. But if I had to go one way or the other, I think they can nudge it a little bit forward, because not only is JSN just a dynamic player, but their ability to be creative with him, to move him all over the formation. He's not pigeonholed as an inside or outside guy. He can win on pretty much any route now. Unbelievable balance, change of direction, and connecting so well. It's just the Sam Darnold story is just terrific. A guy who always had pedigree, was in a lot of bad situations. His run out with the Jets, if you gave him 100 different simulations with the Jets, he had the worst possible run out he could have had, and in the pieces and some of the bad luck he had. So, because I don't think JSN is going to be stopped. And even if Kupp is maybe close to washed, even if Shaheed doesn't fully lift off, JSN's what, a top four, top five fantasy pick. You could even consider him at number one overall. I think a lot of people are going to go running back there, but you can take JSN as early as you want. I can't move them past 12 just on the presence of him alone.
I think that is where I'd fall down here as well. The way to, I guess, insulate yourself from any regression, and there are some parts of this offense from like an explosive play potential that might lead you to believe that they could regress this year, some of the efficiency stuff. But the way to do that, I think, is to ensure that there are ways that you can improve as an offense. And I think that with younger players like Barner at Arroyo at tight end, with Horton at wide receiver, and again, if they add a young running back to the mix here, there's a lot of youth on this team that can just naturally improve as their careers go on. To me, I think that helps. And really, when you have a guy like JSN, you're so right to point this out, that you just need everybody to kind of orbit around him. And I think that these guys like Shaheed is not maybe necessarily like a true number two receiver. Cooper Kupp at this point isn't either. Maybe Torrey Horton can become that guy, but even he's probably, I would say, most likely to be a really, really good number three receiver, although I think he's got more potential than that. Still, even if that's all he is, that's really all you need from a team like that, is to just have a bunch of quality players in the number one wide receiver's orbit. I think they at least check that box. I mentioned their average efficiency ranking for Seattle was number 12. The team that was number one last year was the Los Angeles Rams, our next team up to discuss here. Here's a recap of what they've done in the offseason. They brought back tight end Tyler Higbee, longtime Ram returns. David Questenberry resigns on a one-year deal. Grant Studdard resigns on a two-year deal. Their biggest move was Trent McDuffie, acquired in trade with the Kansas City Chiefs in exchange for a first-round pick plus more. They signed him to a mega contract extension. Jalen Watson, also a cornerback from the Chiefs was brought in on a three-year deal. Cameron Curl re-signed on a three-year deal. He is a safety. They also brought back long snapper Joe Cardona. Okay, so their biggest moves, Scott, came on the other side of the ball from a defensive standpoint. I wonder, now that they've kind of checked that box in the secondary, which I think was their biggest issue last year, you look at their team needs according to Mock Draft Database. Wide receiver, right tackle, although Warren McClendon gave them some good reps last year, they might be fine with him as a starter there. I think tight end, you still got to consider, and linebacker, which just really isn't a position that this team values all that much from a resource standpoint. So I say that to point out here, Scott, I wonder if we're looking at a pretty offensive heavy NFL draft from the Los Angeles Rams coming up, which will be interesting to discuss what was one of the more ultra concentrated passing games last year. Like, do we get a name, Scott, that disrupts that concentration added to the mix here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Sean McVay has always played the hits with his distribution where the ball goes, and one reason why we love that team for fantasy. And also, the Rams have never been afraid to say our offense is a strength. Let's make it stronger. If we have an A-plus offense, let's make it an A-plus offense. But there are questions. You know, Adams, Davante Adams, into his age 34 season, a lot of touchdown deodorant to his production last year, but some of his efficiency metrics, like, it's totally fair. He was 33, but some of his efficiency metrics were dropping a little bit. Kobe Parkinson had an interesting year, 43, 408, and 8. We know the Rams ran out two tight end personnel, three tight end personnel, pretty much more than anybody in the NFL. You talked about them maybe even drafting another tight end, and they did sign Higby. So there's always going to be a crowded room there, but can Parkinson get enough volume to be viable? And Williams and Corum, Blake Corum was one of the most improved NFL players last year, and the stats, the efficiency metrics I care about weren't that much different than those two guys. So Williams, again, part of a McVay offense, you know, automatic goal line, automatic third down work. He was sharing a lot more with Corum down the stretch than people expected. And is that a 60-40 this year? Is that a 65-35? Is that even just a hot hand situation where Corum can play well enough in the first half of a game that he becomes the primary back in the second half of a game? Could Williams get in fumble jail if he has some problems with that, or he misses a blitz pickup or makes some kind of mistake? How much of a threat is Corum to Williams? It doesn't make people not want to draft Williams at all. Bottom line, you got to be bullish on this team. The Rams have every reason to look in the mirror and think, we were just as good as Seattle last year. We played a fabulous Thursday night game near the end of the season. We played a fabulous playoff game. They could have won either one of those games. They didn't. Just, you know, it's kind of like 51-49 runouts there. Seattle was a very worthy Super Bowl champion, but I don't see any reason why the Rams can't think they're just as good as Seattle. Maybe we were even better last year. Stafford still seems like he's going strong. I was worried about his back into last season. That was a horrible call by me. He has an MVP year. McVay, of course, still at the top of his game. So I think the Rams are going to be the favorite to win the NFC West, which may make them the quasi-favorite to win the Super Bowl. And because they're not content to have a strong offense. They always want to keep adding to it. When I do the fantasy power ratings by team, they're going to be, not only they're going to be top five, I mean, they could easily be the number one team on my board.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And it kind of comes back to what I'm thinking here is that, like, this could be, they have the best odds right now, according to BetMGM, to win the Super Bowl next year. I think they have the best odds to be Scott Pianowski's number one ranked fantasy, you know, ecosystem. I think that makes a ton of sense. And it comes back to kind of what we're thinking about here, Scott, which is that I think this could be a rather offensive heavy draft. Now, to be clear, they have the Falcons first round pick at 13th overall, and then they have their own second and third round picks. Then they don't pick again until the sixth round, and then they have 3 7th rounders. So I'm just looking at those first three picks, wondering if those are offensive players. Now, of course, they could still do the same thing and make a strength stronger on the defensive side of the football, whether it's their front seven with some of the edge rushers, interior pass rushers. I think it wouldn't be bad to add another name to the defensive backfield, considering how that went for them last year. But I look at that wide receiver room, Scott, and you know, you mentioned the name Davante Adams. I'm not sure if you caught this while you're doing your, I don't know, shortstop rankings or whatever for fantasy baseball. Sorry, the fantasy baseball. Listen, I only make fun of fantasy baseball, Scott, because there's no way I would ever have the discipline to play it. I would be the worst fantasy baseball player of all time. So just know that I'm lashing out of my own incompetence when it comes to this stuff.
Hey, shortstop's a loaded position. It takes a while to rank those guys. So yes, I probably was buried in the shortstop rankings.
I wouldn't have been able to guess. I mean, I used to play baseball. I know baseball. I wouldn't be able to guess what the deepest position is in fantasy baseball if my life depended on it. So I was just, I was pulling that out of nowhere. What wasn't pulled out of nowhere was Mike Florio's report that the Rams did think about trading Davante Adams. Remember, Jordan Rodriguez and several others thought about, you know, reported they were kind of sniffing around the AJ Brown trade market. That ship has apparently sailed, but Sean McVay, at the NFL league meeting this week, confirmed that they were thinking about trading Davante Adams, that he was in discussions, and they have ultimately told Davante that they were straight up about it. But it's just a reminder that I don't think they're sitting on their hands at pass catcher, whether that is wide receiver or tight end, right? Because, yeah, they added Terrence Ferguson last year in the second round. I think he's a really intriguing player, but I think they will not hesitate if there's a tight end that they like at 13 or in the second round to, again, add to that 13 personnel grouping, or again, even at wide receiver. Adams is probably gone after this year. Their number one wide receiver, Puka Nacua, has been in the headlines this offseason and even into last season for not good reasons. So, and that's not a room that's very deep afterwards. So I just think, Scott, we're going to come away from maybe not their first round pick, maybe it's their second or their third, assessing some new pass catcher of relevance added to this Los Angeles Rams attack.
Yeah, I see that too. You mentioned we had to, at least in passing, mention what's going off the field with Nacua, and also on the field, one of our favorite receivers, and we love throwing it around. Would you rather have JSN? Would you rather have Puka? Because they're just dynamic players. But Puka plays every snap like it's his last. He's such a physical player. He takes on so much contact. He was hurt a lot in college, which is why he was drafted so late, and he's actually been hurt a lot in the NFL. So I think between the uncertainty tied to him with his durability, with some of the other issues going on with Adams into an age 34 season, they need to come out of this draft. Because you just look at the rest of this depth chart, you know, Mumfield and Whittington and Smith, you know, Mario Williams. I don't know if there's another guy who's ready for a promotion. I think they need to find another piece. So also with that draft capital they have, I mean, they can always take like a second round pick and maybe flip it into 2 third round picks or a third and a fourth or something like that. They may choose to take more bites of the apple later. But it's, again, we want to bet where the smart guys are betting. The Rams are one of the smartest teams in the NFL, where they run, you know, the stadium, the marketing, you know, Kevin Demoff and everybody in charge in the front office. McVay, of course, you know, needs no more accolades from us. I mean, he's one of the best coaches in the league. I think they're going to find a receiver who can play right away. I think they're going to draft early enough that somebody who they have expectations for on opening day.
And there's so many types of wide receivers in this draft, Scott. Obviously, you're knee deep in the shortstop rankings. I'm knee deep in the route charts. I've been looking at all these. There's so many different flavors at receiver. If they want to go for somebody that's more of a man coverage, speed based player, there are going to be options at 13 and all the way to their second and third round pick. If they want to go for more of a Rams type rugged wide receiver, go over the middle of the field, all that deal, there's going to be options at that first round pick. Most likely, there's going to be options in round two and round three, because it is if shortstop is deep, Scott, wide receiver in the NFL draft is essentially always deep, and this year is no exception.
Well, as a Patriots fan, man, I need to hear that, because I mean, I realize they added free agency. Pete, you know, Dobbs comes over and gets a big contract, but they still need a front man. I don't know if maybe the AJ Brown trade would make more sense in the summer for the Eagles for financial reasons, but maybe that's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I'm glad to hear it's a deep receiver class, and I can't wait to get more into, you know, some of your perception breakdowns. I don't know anybody who does it better than you do. And I'm excited to see where some of these guys go. And again, it's not just – we have changed. This is how football has changed so much in the past 10 or 15 years, right? It used to be who went in the first round, maybe who went in the second round. Now it's like a third round, fourth round, fifth round players. They can be viable for fantasy. And at the receiver position, this changed in 2014 for the most part. They can be viable in their first season. You know, it's no more of this wait till the year three breakout. So you need to know your prospects. You need to be plugged into the draft. And I'll definitely be all over the Harmon content over the next 6 weeks.
You know who else hopefully is tuning into some of that content and is happy to hear that the wide receiver position is deep this year? It is the Buffalo Bills, who, yes, they made a move this offseason at wide receiver. They still most likely need to make another move. Here's what the Bills did this offseason. Kyle Allen signed on a 2-year contract. Yes, that's the headline move, of course. No, it's DJ Moore, acquired in a trade with the Chicago Bears for a second round pick, plus guaranteed some of his future money. So you know they've got big plans for him. Wide receiver Trent Sherfield signed on a 1-year deal. Dawson Knox signed signed a new 3-year contract. Austin Corbett signed a 1-year deal. Lloyd Cushenberry signs on a 1-year deal. Center Connor McGovern was signed on a 4-year deal back to the team. David Edwards walked as a response to that. The guard, edge rusher Bradley Chubb signed a big 3-year deal. D. Alford signed a 3-year deal. Safety Chauncey Gardner-Johnson signed a 1-year contract, as did safety Geno Stone. Here are their team needs, according to Mock Draft Database. Edge rusher. Feels like every year they need an edge rusher. Also, every year they still need to add to the wide receiver room, which I think is still the case here. Linebacker, defensive line is also a need as they transition from what Sean McDermott's vision for the defense was to new defensive coordinator Jim Leonard under head coach Joe Brady. So, Scott, when you look at this team, they added DJ Moore. I don't think you and I have had a chance to talk about the DJ Moore trade, but I think, yes, he's part of what will improve this wide receiver room, but I still think they need to add another body in the mix here. Maybe it's not at 26th overall in the first round, but their third round pick, their fourth round pick, their fifth round picks, they got two of them. As we're saying here, this is a pretty deep class. I think they add another guy to the mix here to go along with DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Moore coming off a down season, he does have history with Brady, which makes a lot of sense. They're familiar there. It's a better version of what the Patriots did with Dobbs. Moore is a solution, but not a full solution. They're going to draft somebody. And that's the first fantasy question I had is just, you know, what more do they do to the receiver room? Because it's, look, we like Shakir for what he is, but there's just a ton of routes he's never going to be asked to run. Josh Palmer, they gave money to. He didn't work out. Obviously, the entire organization is having a debate over Keon Coleman and whose fault he was. And it's too early to give up on Coleman, but it's also there hasn't been enough positive to have a good vibes there. And you also for fantasy, I'm wondering, you know, Josh Allen, season 9, where's the touchdown count going to be on the ground? I mean, he would get 8 or 9 a year, and then the last 3 seasons, 15, 12, and 14. But do you still want to keep living like that and exposing him to that many hits? And even though they re-signed Knox, is Dalton Kincaid ready for a breakout? 11.7 yards per target last year. I know he's been injury prone, and I know Knox is going to have a role, but I can't see excuse me. I can't seem to quit Kincaid at the draft table, and maybe you can talk me out of that.
Yeah, it's interesting with Dalton Kincaid is I just don't know if he's ever going to be able to get on the field enough, because he just is not an asset as a blocker. And then he has to essentially be like a slot-based move option. And that's why his snap count is just always low. Like last year, he was super efficient on a per-route basis, but he just didn't run enough routes. And yes, like there's just, it still feels like the fantasy kind of community has not fully come around to that. Yeah, like blocking, obviously you don't get any points for that from the tight end perspective. But if you're net zero as a blocker, it does add some real problems with just where you're at for you, like being able to be on the field a ton. And that has certainly been the case for Dalton Kincaid so far. Just wanted to note real quick, you mentioned the touchdowns on the ground for Josh Allen. That is one thing I'm at least looking at here for this team. I don't know if this is like something I can make an actionable ranking change on, but I mentioned David Edwards left in free agency. They did bring back Connor McGovern, but adding like Austin Corbett, Lloyd Cushenberry is nice depth, but they did lose offensive line coach Aaron Cromer, who I think was a big part of what they were as a run team. I think that's like James Cook is going to be fine. I think Josh Allen obviously will still be great as a rusher, but that's just like one more thing to note beyond the fact that the pass catchers are still up in kind of the air here until we see who they add in the NFL draft. Scott, you are always the guy who says to me, you know, once the cheese goes bad, it doesn't get unbad, right? Like once it's going one direction, that's the way it's going. Do you think you'll break that rule for a guy like DJ Moore, who there's no question from a statistical basis has declined the last 2 years, but do you think there's enough there to kind of like excuse that going back with the former coach? Is DJ Moore someone you're going to be in on this year?
Yeah, I think so, because I trust Allen, because he's got the history with Brady, and because he's going to a team that should be structured for him to get anywhere from like 130 to 145 targets. That was never going to be him on the Bears, and that coaching staff inherited him, and they drafted, you know, kind of over his head. And we could see the writing on the wall for his role diminishing last year, but he's getting, I think, rescued at the right time is the way I would phrase it.
I think that's the right way to look at it. And like I said, there's enough there. Not to excuse the production, because I think there are some parts of why he didn't fit into Ben Johnson's offense that will be instructive when we're analyzing DJ Moore going forward. But I think he, from a quarterback standpoint, he fits with Josh Allen. I mentioned this before, like at the time of the trade, that, you know, Josh has said to me previously that, like, oh yeah, he doesn't mind if, like, his number one wide receiver is not running the route at the right depth. It's like, just get open, essentially. I think DJ Moore is a guy who can still do that. Just didn't really fit with what Ben Johnson wanted to do. And obviously we'll be talking about those Bears pass catchers over the course of the offseason as well. But we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we're breaking down more teams that are hopeful contenders here in the 2026 NFL season. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing our teams that will shape the draft series, looking at the contenders. And one of those teams that has a better than plus 2,000 odds to make the Super Bowl, according to BetMGM, to win the Super Bowl, is the Los Angeles Chargers. Here is a recap of their offensive moves, or their offseason moves so far. They brought back quarterback Trey Lance. They brought in running back Keaton Mitchell on a two-year deal. Fullback Alec Ingold also signed a two-year contract. Tight end Charlie Kolar was added on a three-year deal. They brought back Trevor Penning on a one-year contract. They brought Cole Strange over from the Miami Dolphins. History with Mike McDaniel, of course, signed a two-year contract. Tyler Biadasz signed a three-year deal at center. Trey Pipkins, offensive lineman, longtime Charger, was brought back on a two-year deal. Interior defensive lineman Tier Tart signed a three-year contract extension. Khalil Mack was brought back on a one-year deal. Dalvin Tomlinson, interior defensive lineman, signed a one-year contract. Linebacker Dean Leonard re-signed on a one-year deal, as did linebacker Denzel Perryman, and Delshawn Phillips re-signed on a two-year deal as well. Same with safety Tony Jefferson. So a lot of transactions for the Chargers, even though Chargers fans online haven't been happy that they didn't make any big additions. I would say they made some smart additions on the margins. They still need some help at edge rusher, interior offensive lineman, defensive line, and offensive tackle, according to mock draft database. They have picks in the first four rounds. Scott, my big pressing question with this team is just how much of an identity shift are we going to get from an offensive side of the football, going from Greg Roman to Mike McDaniel? And I think seeing them add a fullback, an inline tight end in Charlie Kolar, in addition to a center and a guard, the guard Cole Strange, formerly of your Patriots, but also spent last year with the Miami Dolphins and Mike McDaniel, it does seem like we're going to get a pretty sizable identity shift. What do you think when you're looking at this offense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the McDaniel hire can't be minimized, right? I mean, and we love, I always love anyway, the head coach who maybe doesn't work out, and then you hire him back to his coordinator roots. I think that's such a winning move. It's happened in the NFL over and over again. And so I, the moment they hired McDaniel, I'm like, okay, let's go. Justin Herbert, quarterback ranking by season fantasy, 9-2, 11-17, 11-10. So we haven't seen a great Herbert season in a while. And, you know, some of it's been injuries. Last year, it felt like the Chargers season was stillborn with the moment it started, because their entire offensive line got hurt. The fact that they made the playoffs, I realized they did not play well in the playoffs, were out in 2 seconds, but the fact that they made the playoffs with that offensive line was amazing. And Ladd McConkey has a down season. Keenan Allen presumably is gone. I mean, I guess they could always bring him back on a cheap deal later if they decide to, but I see McConkey as a guy to get. And Hampton, if he can stay healthy, the offensive line is retooled. You know, I would think they would lean into him as a workhorse back. So bottom line is I want to bet on Mike McDaniel. I don't know if I ever want to be the head coach. Maybe he's just like a Josh McDaniels type, where he's a really good coordinator. And, you know, like, a lot of things went wrong in Miami. I don't want to blame it all on one piece. You know, football success has a lot of parents, and you know, failure has a lot of parents too. Just nobody wants to take credit for it. But Harbaugh's a great head coach. McDaniels is a great coordinator. And I want to see what Herbert can do when he actually has more than 2 seconds to throw the ball. Because last year he was running for his life. We saw him actually be a more proactive runner than he's been in recent seasons. I still think this is one of the smartest teams in football. I think the betting market reflects that. They're still one of the favorites, which is why they're on the program today. I think I'm going to be Hampton and McConkey invested when draft season kicks around.
Me too. I still think with Hampton, it'll be an interesting conversation, just as, like, I think he fits McDaniel's, you know, zone heavy scheme pretty well. Obviously, we'll talk about the offensive line. I don't think guys like Keaton Mitchell or, you know, even Kamani Vidal really will eat into his workload all that much if he's healthy. I think those are guys that are just change of pace players that won't be like massive hindrance to him. Like the bottom line is if Omarion Hampton's good, like he's going to be good in fantasy. So it just really depends like how much you view him. Like what do you view him as a real life NFL player? Obviously, I'm with you on McConkey. I think really unlucky season last year. Obviously, Keenan Allen soaking up some more of those layup targets in addition to just the offensive line injuries and just specifically the tackle positions just being a complete train wreck by the end of the year. I think that we can be pretty confident that McConkey is going to have a statistical bounce back season this year. In fact, I feel very confident with that. I think he's going to be wonderfully deployed in this offense. Is there anyone else on this team that kind of has some sleeper appeal to you, whether it's Aronde Gadsden, you know, Charlie Kolar, again, an inline guy. I think it'll be interesting to see like their snap counts against each other. Quentin Johnston, maybe on the trade market, maybe a year four breakout guy, Trey Harris, year two, Keandre Lambert-Smith, like any other names on this roster that have you intrigued?
Yeah, maybe Gadsden. I mean, we can still squint and remember what Jonnu Smith did in Miami when he became the featured player in their offense a couple of years ago. And he's more the wide receiver skills tight end by name, but he's a move tight end. He's an athletic tight end. He moves like a wide receiver. I think he maybe outkicked expectations his rookie year. I'm certainly intrigued by Gadsden. I want to see what the vibes look like in the spring and summer, but I could see him rising up my board.
I think so too. Again, it will be just parsing out the clues from him and Kolar's kind of workflow together, but my guess is I think we'll see a lot of those two guys on the field together, a lot more 12 personnel than what we got last year, and that will mean most likely that this team goes from one of the offenses that used 3+ wide receivers on the field at the fifth highest rate last year in Los Angeles. I think we're going to see that third receiver not be a part of the offense very much. And again, is that Quentin Johnston and Ladd McConkey at the X and Z receiver position specifically, respectively? Or Quentin Johnston, again, there's been some trade rumors about him, like he could potentially be on the move and Trey Harris maybe takes over that spot. I don't think we'll get another big name pass catcher added in the draft. This to me feels like, you know, much to Jim Harbaugh and Joe Hortiz's delight, I think this will be a very trench heavy draft for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Right. And just one more thing with McDaniel, in many of the past years that, you know, we write about the most concentrated offenses, right? The narrow target tree, the marrow distribution. This just screams. This is all the more reason to get McConkey, right? This is going to be a team where you look in the box score of a Charger game and the opponents have targeted 12 guys and the Chargers have targeted like 6. There's going to be games like that.
I love that. I completely agree. I think we will see a very concentrated tree here for Los Angeles. One team that will be fascinating to break that down with, from a distribution standpoint, is the San Francisco 49ers. Next team up on our list here. Here's a recap of their offensive moves. The big one was bringing in Mike Evans on a 3-year contract. They also signed wide receiver Christian Kirk to a 1-year deal. Offensive tackle Vidarian Lowe was signed on a 2-year deal. Brett Toth, 1-year deal. Offensive guard Robert Jones signs a 1-year contract. Osa Odighizuwa was acquired in a trade with the Dallas Cowboys for a 3rd-round draft pick. Linebacker Luke Gifford re-signed on a 2-year deal. Also, old friend alert, linebacker Dre Greenlaw signed on a 1-year deal. Nate Hobbs signs on a 1-year deal. They also re-signed they re-signed kicker Eddie Pinheiro to a big 4-year contract because they're like, we don't want to be messing around with any kickers. They got some nice games out of Pinheiro. They want to keep him around. We'll see how that ages. So that was a recap of their offensive moves. Team needs, according to Mock Draft Database, offensive tackle. Feels like they need an offensive tackle and a succession plan for Trent Williams every single year. Wide receiver, edge rusher, defensive lineman. I mean, Scott, I think we know what this, at least the starters on this offense, will look like. We know who they will be when everybody is healthy, but that when is kind of doing some big heavy lifting here. What do you think about when you look at this Niners team right now?
Yeah, but the first thing I can't get away from is just how old the core of the team is. McCaffrey's heading into his 10th season, age 30. It's 13 seasons, age 33 for Evans. It's 10 seasons, age 33 for George Kittle. These are all Hall of Famer. I think Evans is already there. I think McCaffrey's probably already there. Kittle better make the Hall of Fame. His peak play is as good as anybody's. He could. When I was talking tight end Mount Rushmore to my friend Michael Salfino, he's like, you got to have Kittle in there. I initially didn't, but he made a very strong case of why Kittle belonged. You mentioned Trent Williams there. star offensive tackle, another Hall of Famer. He's going to be 38. So if I'm the Niners, I think what they do with the draft and with personnel moves between now and the start of the season, this is kind of an all-in year for them, because when your core is this old, you're not thinking 2 years, 3 years down the line. You're thinking, can we – and, of course, remember, they were a little bit overshadowed by the Rams and Seahawks, but obviously a playoff team in that loaded NFC West, and they were in the hunt for a number one seed at one point late in the season. When I see a lot of pieces I like, but I'm not sure maybe who I want to draft, what ultimately ends up filtering in is that maybe it's the quarterback who's the target, right? If Brock Purdy can have a healthy season, he could be somebody who drafts quarterback 8, quarterback 9, quarterback 12, quarterback 13. He might go somewhere in that pocket and could easily be a top 5 quarterback, has a little bit of running juice, has a dynamic tight end when healthy, has one of the all-time great touchdown scorers in Mike Evans, high-pointing the ball and being so good in tight spaces. McCaffrey still has something left. He was much less of an efficient runner last year, but this feels like the last dance season for the Niners. I think they're going to at some point have to tear it all down and start from scratch and build a new like 5-year plan. But I think their window has one more relevant season.
And I think that whatever their next window is can still be a good one, because I think Purdy and, like, as long as Purdy and Shanahan are there, I think that, you know, they've got a good base to build around. But you're right that, I mean, a lot of these guys probably are in their last dance moment. I mean, McCaffrey talked about this after the season. He said that was the hardest season of his life last year. And I mean, yeah, he handled 480-something opportunities, the fourth most for a running back since the year 2000. Shanahan said this week that they'd like to see less wear and tear on McCaffrey. He's never lived by those words. He says things like that, and yet when McCaffrey's healthy, he can't help but push the McCaffrey button over and over again. So I'll kind of believe that when I see it. Maybe they spend like a day 2 draft pick on some random running back that they hate by the end of training camp. And, you know, Jordan James is the backup. I don't know. We'll see about that. I look at Mike Evans. He's obviously towards the end here. He's only really on a 1-year deal. Christian Kirk, 1-year deal. But I do like your take on the Brock Purdy of it all. Like, Purdy was a quarterback target for me last year, and it just didn't work out from an injury standpoint. But he was really good at the end of the season when at least like Kittle and McCaffrey were healthy, and Pearsall had a couple of moments there. Jennings had a couple of moments here and there. So I think that makes a lot of sense, because I want to be invested in this ecosystem, but there's obvious health risks with essentially every member of the offense here, whether it's Evans, Pearsall, McCaffrey, and obviously Kittle probably not likely to start the season.
So when we talked about, you know, the ages here, Pearsall's the one exception, right? He's the front nine guy. What's your state of the union address on fantasy value for Ricky Pearsall right now?
Man, I like Pearsall's game a lot. I'm a fan. I think the Evans addition helps him in a way that he will not have to line up so much as the vertical on-ball player. I think that wasn't the original plan for him. I do think we just don't give enough credit, Scott, to how much this team was kind of thrown for a loop with the whole Brandon Ayuk fiasco. Like, they obviously planned for him to be their vertical X receiver, and that, for a lot of different reasons, did not go to plan. So I think they kind of had to cobble that role together essentially with Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall last year, which wasn't, it really didn't fit either one of those two guys. So essentially, that, I think having Evans there takes care of that for 1 year, and that should actually be good for Pearsall to get more of the type of targets he should be managing as opposed to some of the vertical stuff. So I think as long as he can stay healthy, which, I mean, that's a pretty big if at this point, Pearsall is definitely like a post-type sleeper type guy that I would love to draft this year.
Yeah, love post-type sleepers. And man, it's just crazy how the Ayuk thing went from, oh, he's figuring it out, oh, he's becoming a team leader, oh, let's make him a captain, to like, man, this is like headed for divorce. Nobody wants to talk to each other anymore. Do you see a fit for Ayuk somewhere? Is there a team that you're begging to pick up the phone and call
Brandon? It's just Washington. It's just Washington. Like, it's a little weird how it feels as if, and look, Niners fans have feelings about this, whatever. I don't know all of the information, so I'm not really here to play judge and jury at how this is going, but it just feels a little bizarre that like he's still on the team. I know they don't have like salary cap contractually. There's no reason for them to move on from him, but they're not, I don't think they're going to get a sixth or seventh round pick or something for him. Like, we all know he wants to play for Washington. We know Washington wants to have him. So, like, just cut him already and be done with it. Like, you want to be done with this guy. Why hang on to him through this to, like, make him pay for what he did to you? I don't know. It feels like these two are just toxic together. Ayuk and San Francisco, they have been for years. Like, just be done with each other already. Move on, break up. Like, you're already, like, Niners, you're already dating somebody else. You already got Mike Evans moving into the house. Like, you got to get your ex to move out now here as well and just be done with this so you don't have to think about it, talk about it, or anything. And, again, Brandon Ayuk can just go play for Washington and catch passes from his buddy Jaden Daniels. Like, we all know that's what's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, you're already dating somebody else. And we've seen this movie before. The tone of it and the tenor of it was a little bit different, but Deebo Samuel winds up going to Washington. They don't mind open receivers. This is another team that needs to get younger. Everything went wrong with Washington. Just one more thing to put a bow on San Francisco. I just like to see this team run a little bit fair with the injuries. They've been ravaged. I think 2 years ago, they were the most injured team in football. And then last year, they were certainly on the higher end of that list. I just like to see them have a fair injury run out for once, because I feel like they never do.
Listen, again, I'm not really here to play judge and jury with this stuff. But did you, again, when you were in the middle of your catcher rankings or whatever, did you happen to see that John Lynch was asked at the league meeting this week about they asked him about the substation? Was like the first question that he got, the electrical substation conspiracy. And he said they brought in an independent scientist to evaluate it. And apparently whoever that independent scientist is says they're all good. I would like to know what that scientist's, him or her, whatever, what their consulting fee was on that, because I have to imagine whatever it was an obnoxiously large number. So if we're talking about their health, at least the Niners they're looking into it very deeply, and they decide that the substation is a big nothing burger.
God, I hope it is. That's over my level of science sophistication. I'll openly admit that. But you know, we all want to see the best players on the field. And again, I mentioned all these Hall of Fame talents. We don't know when Kittle will be back. We hope for McCaffrey to play most of a full season. We hope Evans can get through most of a full season. None of these guys, even Purdy was hurt last year. Williams, of course, wasn't on the field for several key games, and he's their left tackle. So usually you think, okay, injuries are just going to regress to the mean, right? So you take the teams that are injury lucky and you regress them down. You take the teams that are injury unlucky, you regress them up. But maybe this is the year where we finally decide, is there a reason? It could also be, you know, it could be practice habits. It could be something about that the team is doing that maybe they need to reevaluate that's putting their players at risk. I'm just floating that as very loose speculation. I don't have anything that points to that, but you need to be open-minded when a team has had this problem for multiple seasons.
Yeah. How about we get that independent scientist into the training room and evaluate some of that, see if there's any nothing burgers down there. I think that would be my recommendation. If the Niners would like to pay me a big fat consulting fee, that would be my suggestion there. On that note, perfect time.
Go into consulting. That's where the cheddar is. Go into consulting.
That's where the cheddar is, baby. That's right. Especially if I'm gonna stop. I'm gonna get us to break here so I don't say something to get myself in trouble here. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking more contending teams. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to look at the hopeful contenders here in our teams, the Shape the Draft series. Let's go to the NFC here. Let's talk Philadelphia Eagles. Here is a recap of their offseason moves so far. They acquired Andy Dalton in a trade with the Carolina Panthers. They also added running back Damian Pierce on a one-year contract. Marquise Brown signs a one-year deal, as did Elijah Moore. My God, this is like an abandoned dynasty team over here. Damian Pierce, Marquise Brown, Elijah Moore. They also made a bunch of moves at tight end. They re-signed both Grant Calcaterra and Dallas Goedert. They also brought in tight end Johnny Munt and Stone Smart on one-year deals. Offensive lineman Fred Johnson re-signs on a one-year deal. Jordan Davis signs a three-year mega extension. Arnold Ebiketie signs a one-year deal. Jonathan Jones agrees to terms on a one-year deal. Tariq Woolen, a cornerback, also agrees on a one-year deal, as did safety Marcus Epps. Here's what they still need. According to Mock Draft Database, an edge rusher. They're always looking to add to the front seven, offensive tackle, wide receiver. And despite all those names at tight end, they still could use another tight end. Because clearly, Scott, and this is where I want to start this conversation, I think we're going to see a pretty different looking Philadelphia Eagles offensive structure this year with Sean Mannion taking over as the offensive coordinator. At least that's my suspicion. What are you thinking when you're looking at this Eagles team?
Yeah, new year, new offensive coordinator for the Eagles. That's, I feel sorry for Jalen Hurts having to change the playbook every year, but it's part of the price of success. You know, they pulled back from the tush push a little bit. They pulled back from Hurts as a runner. He wasn't as interested running proactively or in the flow of the game. So I wonder how much that translates year over year. And are the Dallas Goedert, this is tied into this, are the Dallas Goedert touchdowns sticky? When Jalen Hurts isn't punching him in, that opens up what? Tight end around the goal line. Goedert finally had that breakout season we were looking for. A lot of it was touchdown driven. Now age 31 season. And of course, I always have to ask with the Eagles, is this team happy? Is the coaching staff happy with Hurts? Is Hurts happy with the coaching staff? Obviously, the Brown saga overwhelms this team, whether they trade him or they don't trade him. That's going to be a big centerpiece of what they do. And the team won the Super Bowl, was dominant, crushed everybody in the playoffs, you know, ran Kansas City off the field in the Super Bowl just, you know, the previous season. And then last year, they were a team that made the playoffs. And I was like, no, the Eagles have no upside here. They can't beat like two or three good teams in a row. There's too many holes here. So I generally think they're one of the smarter teams. They draft well. They, I think, handle the salary cap really well. I just got to figure out what they're doing with Hurts and what they're doing with their wide receiver room before I get a good handle on how to draft this team. I feel like you're going to draft much more inefficiently of them maybe in April and May, and you're going to have a better handle on how things look in July and August when maybe the Brown thing has finally been settled one way or the other.
Yeah, it just, like, that's the missing piece here. And when asked this week, Howie Roseman gave the classic, and Nick Sirianni essentially did as well, like, AJ Brown is a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. That means nothing. Like, I still think that there is a backdoor handshake agreement that AJ Brown will be a member of the New England Patriots in June, once the June 1st like thing passes and they can make that trade. That's still my guess. Again, that's just purely a guess, purely speculation. But yeah, I think that he ends up not on this roster this year. But if he does, then all of that like hypothesis analysis is completely moot. Like it is a full different change. I think wide receiver could be a thing again that they added the first round this year. I think it's going to be, as Josh and I talked about earlier this week, an offensive heavy draft for the Eagles. So we almost kind of have to leave the discussion there for Philadelphia, because I think they're going to be one of the most interesting teams to talk about with this change in offensive structure. Like, what does that mean for the run game without Jeff Stoutland? Are there more tight ends in the mix here? Is Devontae Smith promoted to the number one receiver role? Like, those are questions we want to know the answer to, but I don't think we can really talk about them until AJ Brown is or is not on the roster. So let's quickly wrap this discussion up with our final team here, the Detroit Lions. Recap of their offseason moves so far. Teddy Bridgewater signs a one-year deal. Isaiah Pacheco signs a one-year deal. Greg Dortch signs a one-year deal. Tyler Conklin, one-year deal. Cade Mays at the center position signs a three-year deal. Ben Bartsch signs a one-year deal at offensive tackle. Juice Scruggs is brought in with the trade with the Houston Texans that sent David Montgomery to Houston. Larry Borum signs a deal with the team at offensive tackle. Like, they made a lot of additions there as well as to their defense. Tons of names added on defense. The places they still need to add, according to Mock Draft Database, offensive tackle. They're potentially moving Penei Sewell to left tackle to take Taylor Decker's place, which opens up a pretty big hole at right tackle, if so. Edge rusher, they need a running mate to Aiden Hutchinson. They still need help on the interior offensive line and at linebacker. So, Scott, I think from a fantasy standpoint, this team is pretty set. I think it just comes down to the health of the offensive line and can that help take this offense back up to the moon after a slight step back last year?
Yeah, they're much like the Chargers. With the offensive line injuries, it capped their upside significantly, and so they need to fortify that position. They've also run really unlucky with defensive injuries. 2 years ago, it was terrible. Last year, it was bad. I would love to see that second pass rusher to go with Hutchinson, one of my favorite players, and I think he was going to have a chance at defensive player of the year before he gets hurt last season. I'm curious about what running back do they add, and are we ready for the full Gibbs takeover? Some people will take him 101 or 102. In their drafts, but he needs a certain amount of volume to justify that. I'd like to see more consistency from Jameson Williams, who just a classic. all receivers are volatile, but it feels like he's 7-159-2 one week and he's 113-0 the next week. Did he even play? He even is capable of putting up a bagel from time to time. And what do we get from Sam Laporta? He was tight end 1 his rookie season, tight end 6 his second season because of injuries largely. He only played 9 games, tight end 26 last year. We saw the offense be far less efficient after he got hurt, and I think their upside kind of all went out the window when there was no Laporta in the second half of the year. The Lions went from being underdogs to overdogs to, you know, maybe the best team in the NFL or the best team in the NFC. Now they're just another good team. And I'm really curious to see which – it's a fork in the road season for them. Are they just going to be a – they can get back to the playoffs. Obviously, that division, everybody had a winning record last year. There's no shame in missing given the way Chicago got better. And obviously, Minnesota was playing really well at the end of the year. The Packers are always good, a very strong organization. But I think this is a fork in the road of if the Lions have a window of 2 or 3 more years, or if maybe next season we're talking about, okay, this didn't work out. How do we tear it all down and try to build it back up?
Yeah, it's a super interesting inflection point season, I think, for Detroit, honestly, which is really fascinating. And I think that when you look at this team, Scott, like you brought up the name Sam Laporta, what I think will be really fascinating to discuss over the course of the offseason, because again, I don't think they're going to add another playmaker to the mix here. Maybe at running back, they have 2 fourth rounders, 2 fifth rounders. I don't think Isaiah Pacheco is, you know, he's not taking over like Dave Montgomery's workload. I think they'll still add another name there, but good depth piece if they don't get somebody they like. And it's not that great of a running back class. Anyways, we know the whole deal here. But Sam Laporta, like once he got hurt, it was super concentrated between St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Jahmyr Gibbs. That's it. Like, does Isaac Tesla make more noise in year 2? Does he eat into the target distribution here? Does a healthy Laporta coming back in a very tight end focused offense? Obviously, Drew Petzing, like that offense can run through the tight end. We have seen it with Trey McBride. I don't think that's going to happen here because the receiving talent is too good and Jared Goff fits the unit too well. But those questions, I think, will be fascinating when we're ranking guys like Jameson Williams. Like, St. Brown's always going to get his. When we're ranking Jameson Williams, those guys like Tesla year 2, if he takes a leap, or Sam Laporta back healthy, those will be pretty key factors there. We're going to come into our last break of the show here, which means that's going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, if you're live with us on YouTube, we're going to keep going on the other side of this break. We're going to talk about the Panthers. We're going to talk about the Texans, two interesting teams at kind of a crossroads moment with their young quarterbacks. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and we're going to wrap up our conversation on contenders. Two teams that are not in the list of most likely to win the Super Bowl, according to BetMGM, but they both made the playoffs last year, and they're both coming into their fourth seasons with quarterbacks they took very, very high in the 2023 NFL draft. That is the Houston Texans and the Carolina Panthers, who, Scott, if we're continuing to talk about shared DNA here, in my aggregate offensive efficiency rankings last year, the Texans were 25th and the Panthers were 26th. So not great offensive environments last year. I'll just throw them both to you. Which team do you find more fascinating to talk about from an offensive standpoint this year?
I'm really torn on this because I think Stroud has more tools than Young, but I like Canales more as a coach. But then again, the dynamic receiver here is Nico Collins, so it goes back to Houston. But then last year, Young, he in all the efficiency stats I care about, he improved last year. It wasn't a big gain in most of the areas, but at least he got better. And when they get into the playoffs, and they actually almost won their playoff game, put up a competitive fight, I think you have to just give Young a couple more years to figure things out. The problem with Stroud is that Nico's missed time consistently. He just hasn't come close to playing a full season yet. And the offensive line was so awful last year that it makes sense that Stroud lost his mojo. He lost his confidence. And he was, you know, kind of just a deer in the headlights for most of that season. They obviously make the playoffs because their defense was so good. I lean towards being more interested in the Houston side of it because they have the alpha receiver. And because I think Stroud at his peak can be better than Young. But I don't want to discount Jalen Coker looking like a football player last year and really ending the season on a high note, played well in the playoffs too. And Canales is somebody who I believe in. I think he's not McVay or Andy Reid, but I think he's like a top 10 offensive mind in the league right now.
Do you think we're over punishing CJ Stroud for what was admittedly a disastrous playoff run? Like, our last our last memory of Stroud in the Patriots game and the Steelers game was a disaster. I mean, the Patriots game especially was one of the worst quarterback games we've seen in the postseason in recent memory. However, if you look back at last season on the whole, the 2025 season, he was eighth in EPA per play. Like, he wasn't that bad in the rate, 15th in success rate. Like, I think we've over-punished Stroud for these failures in big moments and regressing off of his rookie year. Like, he definitely has not even that form that I talk about there. Like, he's not come close to what he was as a rookie. But I don't know. Like, I think that I've got a lot more faith in Stroud. And, like, I don't know how I feel about Nick Caley and the offensive environment and all that. But, like, if Jaden Higgins can take a step in year two, if Jalen Noel can get on the field in year two, if the run game with David Montgomery can just be normal, like, they've ranked 31st in rushing success rate in each of the three seasons that Stroud has been the quarterback. And I'm saying a lot of ifs here, so don't get me wrong. I understand these are not, none of these are locks. But shoot, like, again, Nico Collins, full season, maybe a full season. If we get closer to, like, an average offensive line, I think this ecosystem actually has some appeal to it.
Yeah, that's well stated. And you kind of led into this. The last time we saw Stroud, he played so awful in that New England game. Like, the Patriots have a good defense. It was poor weather. That it obscures the fact. It's like, you ask people, well, how many interceptions do you think Stroud threw last year? Oh, what, 15, 17? He threw 8. I realize he missed 3 games, but his interception rate was above league code. His sack avoidance got a lot better. This is a guy who got sacked 52 times the previous year, 17 games. He only got sacked 23 times last year. Again, he was above the league average in sack avoidance. So I realize he made 17 negative plays against the Patriots. He basically lost that game as much as any one player can lose a football game. That's the burden of being a quarterback. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. He wasn't maybe as bad in 2025. I think this speaks to your point, as he looked at the end of the season, and that probably colors a lot of people's view of Stroud and rank of Stroud right now. What's going to happen is he's going to be drafted so late, or not even drafted at all, in maybe some medium and shallow leagues, and he still has Pro Bowl upside because he's Nico Collins is tied to him, and because he's still just in what, year 4 of his career. It's too early to say, age 25 season, give him an offensive line that doesn't fall apart and see if he can get some of that confidence back.
Right, he's 24, right? He won't be 25 until October. Like, this is only his 4th season. Again, I think that if you gave people 100 guesses, look, there's not that many quarterbacks, so I'm overstating it. But if you gave them 10 guesses, I don't think that they'd be able to guess that CJ Stroud was sandwiched between Patrick Mahomes and Sam Darnold in EPA per play last year. Like, I think that the two people that they think he's sandwiched between would be much lesser names than that. And I think the Jets, there's going to be so... Right, just Geno Smith. Where was Geno Smith in EPA per play? Oh, 25th out of 26 quarterbacks with 350 or more plays. Cam Ward and Joe Flacco sandwiched Geno Smith, by the way. So my point in saying all that is, I think there's going to be so much, like, vitriol to Stroud because of the last memory that, like, maybe just the natural contrarian in me wants to say, like, there can actually be some hope for Stroud in year two of this system. He just takes a step mentally, as all quarterbacks do as they go through their career. He just is better at recognizing things pre-snap, feels more comfortable behind this offensive line, that, like, oh, I'm into a Jalen Noel as a last round sleeper. I'm into Jaden Higgins in year two, or Nico Collins is still, like, a top 2 round, you know, fantasy wide receiver pick. I just feel like the narrative on Stroud has maybe gone a little bit too far. And that's kind of where I think I leave this Texans kind of breakdown on the EPA per play and the quarterback rankings. Scott, no rose to put on the Bryce Young picture here. He was 22nd out of 26 qualifying quarterbacks in EPA per play, sandwiched between the great Jacoby Brissett and Tua Tagovailoa, he of the minimum contract with the Atlanta Falcons after taking on a historic dead cap hit. So my question to you is just, how much faith do you have, if any faith at all, that there is more from Bryce Young to go for, especially this is a young offense, Tetero McMillan year 2, Jalen Coker firmly established now as the starter. He'll get to run out there. Dave Canales at the league meetings this week said, when asked about what they're looking at the 19th overall pick, he said wide receiver, again, tight end, and safety. Which is pretty direct for Dave to just say that, but 2 of the 3 positions are pass catchers. So I don't know. Like, what's your level of faith with this Panthers environment overall?
I mean, could Sadiq be a tight end target for them? He's the guy I was dreaming of the Patriots drafting, and then he had such a great combine. He'll never get to their pick. Would he make sense for Carolina? Again, you know, McMillan had a good rookie year. Coker got better. I like the coach. I think Hubbard's going to be better than he was last year. He was hurt a lot last year, and obviously there was challenge for his job. It was, you know, he was a number two piece kind of most of the second half because they had other guys rolling, but I think he'll be a decent fantasy pick this year. It's just, I wonder if this is the steakhouse where it's like, hey, great appetizers, great bar, you know, great atmosphere. You know, the host stand is doing a great job. Valet parking. How's the steak? Steak, it's all right. You know, it's kind of where I'm at with Bryce Young. I like the pieces around him. I like the people in charge here. Yeah, I'm not sure if the steak is going to hold up.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel too. And again, when the Mock Draft Monday episode that I just taped with Josh Norris, he sent Casey Concepcion to the Panthers at the 19th overall pick. And I get it. Like, I get why the Panthers would want a guy like that in the room. It's kind of what they wanted. They like used Jimmy Horn as that pre-snap motion guy to create leverage. And now you're getting a guy that I think is an awesome wide receiver prospect and just adding him there. Again, it adds a different element to T-Mac. It adds a different element to Jalen Coker. But then I'm like, we're coming out. I'm going to be coming out of the first round of the NFL draft, like trying to tell people, well, I don't know, it'll all be okay for all three of these pass catchers with Bryce Young. And like, I do still have a little bit of faith in that Bryce Young can take another step, that he can be, I don't know, like, what's the ceiling on Bryce Young? Can he be the 12th best quarterback in the league in the right environment? Like, that would probably be, I think, the upside scenario for a guy like Bryce Young. And man, we're talking about a lot of pass catchers there from a fantasy standpoint where we're trying to parse out that production. That for a team that wants to run the football too, by the way. They don't want to be one of these teams that leads the NFL in pass attempts or something like that. So that would be a pretty big squeeze if we come out of this first round. A tight end is different because they don't really have like a proven body in that room. But at wide receiver, if there's another wideout added to the mix here, Scott, things are getting a little tight for a team that, you know, again, we haven't seen for all Stroud's struggles in the postseason, we haven't seen Bryce Young like consistently reach those levels just yet.
And he's 5'10 and he's not getting any taller. I mean, Canales, it's always going to be incumbent on him to be creative about setting up plays that he likes and that Young likes and setting up lanes that Young can see through. And so it's not that it can't work. You know, Russell Wilson was on a Hall of Fame trajectory for a long time in Denver. He was a shorter player. You know, for a moment, Doug Flutie was a viable NFL player. You know, even somebody like Drew Brees, you know, over 6 feet, but barely, you know, he made it work because he was great at everything else. But there are always challenges when you have a quarterback who's under 6 feet. You need to be checking almost every other box.
Feels like fantasy Twitter will try to be, you know, one-upping each other to draft Tedero McMillan. Let's just say Scott Pienowski, there's no round one receiver added here. So it's T-Mac. It's maybe somebody added at some point in the draft here. It's Jalen Coker. It's Xavier Leggett. It would just be crazy to use a first-round pick on a wide receiver 3 years in a row. I mean, I get it. Like, you don't – the good ones get paid. You can't trade – you can't find them anywhere else. So I get it from that standpoint. But anyways, let's just say it's those guys and maybe like a – you know, third, fourth, fifth rounder added at wide receiver. Is Tedero McMillan going to be a proactive draft pick for you this year? Is he going to be someone you might like kind of, it depends on where he falls.
I'm okay with him in the middle to late part of the second round. I think he'd be a fine third round pick. He'll probably be a late second round pick in most leagues. I'm okay with that.
I mean, I like it. Yeah. I think I like it too. I mean, he's just a really, really good player. And again, I don't think Bryce Young is unsalvageable. I guess is where I would put it. I don't think he is completely unsalvageable. I think he can be functional enough to get like these guys the football, but we shall see. A lot of questions to answer for this Panthers offense after they spent a ton of resources on the defensive side of the football, which is why I think Canales highlighted two offensive positions there when asked about what they could do in the first round. Scott, appreciate the hell out of you, buddy. Taking some time away from the shortstop rankings to stop in here for some fantasy football talk, but, buddy. I appreciate you doing it.
Oh, my pleasure. Always great to talk ball. I hope Justin Boone is enjoying his much-earned vacation and just can't wait for the draft to get here and can't wait to open up Yahoo Fantasy Football. And again, while you're waiting for that, why not draft another Yahoo Fantasy Baseball League? We are open for business. If you got some FOMO cooking, you know, Matt, I'd like to see you in a league. Maybe I'll recruit Matt Harmon into a fantasy baseball league and force him to be knowledgeable about outfielders and closers and all that stuff. But even if I can't get Matt, I want you, dear listener, to maybe add a fantasy baseball league to your plate this year. And then, man, we're going to be all things football soon. So I can't wait for that.
I'm just not man enough, Scott. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just not man enough to handle fantasy baseball. Okay. Like, the listeners should get out there and start a fantasy baseball league so that they can sit there and say, I'm better than Matt Harmon because I can handle fantasy football or fantasy baseball. And this clown absolutely cannot. So the listeners,
well,
viewers,
I mean, Matt, you take on a job, you take on a side project called Reception Perception, which means you have to chart every route run by every receiver and tight end. I mean, you know, I can't imagine how much time that you know, with all the billable hours in that project. But I know you do have some people helping you out. But you know, much respect for the 12-month a year bunker you go down into for football. And again, when I need receiver intel, whether it's reading your stuff or, you know, hitting you on the bat phone when necessary, you know, if I need, and I know other people do that, you know, Adam Levitan always defers to you on this stuff. And I'm going to be the same way. When I need receiver intel, I'm going to Harmon.
That's what I'm here for. And I love it. So that is why I continue to be in that bunker and not ranking first baseman or whatever Scott is doing. Scott's doing the Lord's work. But speaking of wide receivers, this show is going to be back on Thursday as Ray Garvin joins me for part one of our wide receiver prospect preview. Yes, I am ready to give you guys some takes, some thoughts on the top wide receivers in this draft class. We're not going to cover everybody. That's why it's part one. We're going to be getting into some of the names that are, you know, kind of first, second round picks, and then we'll have a part two on some of the deeper names. But it's not just going to be me and Ray on the show tomorrow. Omar Cooper Jr., one of those top wide receiver prospects, is going to join me for an interview at the end of the show as well. So make sure you check that out. That's going to be live right here at 2 p.m. Eastern on this YouTube channel. Until then, we are out.